It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right, Scott Luton broadcasting live once again from Jumpstart 19. Big thanks to our friends at SMC3. It's been a fantastic day. I want to bring in our co-host, Will Haraway. Good afternoon, Will.
Hanging in there, Scott.
Man, what a day of thought leadership.
Yes, sir.
As we've talked about in each segment, Jumpstart 2019 is the definitive supply chain intelligence gathering. If you're in supply chain, this is the place to be this week. Again, hosted by our good friends over at SMC3. I think it goes through Wednesday or Thursday.
I believe Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. So in this final segment, we've got two special guests. First up, we've got Michael Golden with Arnall, Golden, and Gregory LLP, which is a well-known law firm with offices in Atlanta and Washington that is celebrating 70 years of serving the industry. So good afternoon, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
You bet. And they do a lot of work in the transportation, logistics, and in supply chain space. So good to have Michael back. We also have Rob Adams with JGS Resources, which provides transaction advisory services for the logistics, waste management, and staffing industries. Hey, Rob, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. Coming in loud and clear. Fantastic. Great to have Michael and Rob with us. So we're close to wrapping up day one, which of a jam-packed Jumpstart 2019. So what we thought we'd start with is, what are some of y'all's key takeaways from the presentations and the breakouts that you've been a part of today?
Well, I'd say in years past, one of the recurring themes you heard about was driver shortages.
Right.
We haven't heard that this morning. What we've heard about is technology, 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 artificial intelligence, and tracking technology. It's really a tech space.
Can't get away from getting tracked.
Can't
right?
get away
data,
from
data, baby.
At fingertips these days.
Where's the data and how can you grab it?
Absolutely.
How can you see it?
Rob, what about on your end?
I agree. The first breakout was in E-Freight Solutions, which has a great, great product in the less-than-truckload space.
Yeah.
And Spencer has done a super job building that company. And that goes right along with the data and managing the data to make a better company.
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, both of y'all touched on how strong of a theme technology has been. And you know, you kind of expect that in this day and age, Amazon era, and how technology has been revolutionizing all aspects, right, including end-to-end supply chain. But boy, the parade of speakers that touched on how they're doubling down on technology and not, you know, some of these things we've been talking about for years. Well, it's in action. It's no longer, you know, in the up ahead in the windshield. In fact, we had Bob Farrell with Global Trans. Y'all may have seen him today. He's going to be speaking tomorrow, Will?
I think so.
They are a technology super competitor already, about a $1.5 billion transportation company. He said that 2019 is going to be the year of technology for the firm. So the best getting better. It was really an eye-opening conversation with Rob, the executive chairman there with Global Trans. So we want to pick y'all's brain from your organizational standpoint, as well as get some additional observations for some of the trends going on in industry. But we also want to get to know you a little better first. So, Rob, let's start with you. Tell us a little about your background and how you got here.
After college, I was with Deloitte as an auditor and CPA, and then pursued an MBA. And then since then, I've been in the private equity industry, mm-hmm. working specifically in the logistics and waste management areas, helping private equity funds raise capital around logistics and waste management companies.
Been a busy space in the last couple of years, maybe?
It has. It's really, you know, it's been around and it's been a piece of their investment thesis, but in the last few years, it's really taken right. off. And as so many people in the industry know, the multiples have risen and have attracted a lot of interest in that space.
Mm. I assume you've talked to our friends at Rubicon Global.
I have. That's a great company yep. they built. Disruptive technology in the waste space, which is a difficult, difficult place to right. disrupt.
Yeah. Friends of the show.
Big friends of the show. Yep. Absolutely. So we want to dive more into that in just a second. So hold that thought, Rob. And Michael, same question to you. Tell us a little about your background, how you got here.
Well, I'm a lawyer, and I'm unusual in that I've only had one job in my life. I graduated from law school and went to work for the firm that I'm at now. And I'm basically a mergers and acquisitions lawyer. And like a lot of people, and probably the private equity investors, I don't know that anybody paid attention to transportation or logistics pre-Amazon. And the fact that you can get something at your door in 2 hours or less, now everybody's interested. How does that happen? How can I get it quicker? And why do I have to pay for shipping when I can get it for free?
Right.
And being in Atlanta for logistics is like being in Northern California for software. It's all happening
here. I might
here.
Steal that from you.
Go ahead. Just footnote me, please.
Okay. Supply chain city.
That's right.
That was it right there.
That's right.
And so,
quote him.
You know, if the people are wearing red shoes and you're in the shoe business, you better have some red shoes on your shelf. And so that's how we got into it, and the firm's committed to it. And we actually have a long history of representing companies in this space. We actually, SMC3 is a client of ours, and they are actually a technology-oriented entity. And we've represented SMC3 for 40 years.
Wow. Well, you know, it would take us all week to list off all the different industry associations that your firm is either involved in or supports, what have you. But I think we both served on the Georgia Logistics Summit Executive Committee for 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Right, yeah. Michael?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Big supporters. Appreciate and being a 15-year volunteer on our end for Apex Atlanta and serving the supply chain space. Appreciate firms like yours, right? Because that's what it takes to make Atlanta to be the Northern, what did you say, Northern California for software, right?
That's right.
To make Atlanta the hashtag supply chain city, it takes that level investment from services to the, you know, manufacturers and transportation companies to the educational system, you name it. But you're right, Will, supply chain city, and it's only getting bigger and better. So let's circle back, Rob. And let's talk about, you mentioned the PE activity. Private equity has really stepped up its movement into the transportation and logistics space. I saw an early report that PE acquired 94 transportation logistics companies in 2015, right? And to our listeners, as you can tell, we're live at Jumpstart 19, and we're going to have a little background music here. So in 2015... 94 such companies were acquired by private equity. In 2017, 135 such acquisitions, such companies were acquired, up nearly 44%. So, Rob, share some of your expertise there. What's driving that, and why is there more comfort and less perceived risk?
I think it goes back to the downturn in 08 and 09. A lot of logistics companies really, really suffered during that period with the volume drop. So what emerged out of that is stronger, better, and more disciplined companies. And as the market came back, these companies started benefiting from that. And they had to invest in technology and good people, good business models, good revenue generation models, which are all buzzwords for private equity. The word is scalable. So they want to be able to double, triple, and quadruple the platform. Instead of just going out and buying another truck for every $200,000 of revenue, they like technology, they like a platform, an administrative platform, and discipline across it to help scale that model and get their return.
So, and Will, there was some big news last week, kind of along these lines, Rob, major investment. We were talking pre-show about from an additive manufacturing.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about Desktop Metal. Yeah, the Koch brothers invested $160 million in Desktop Metal, which significant investment in additive manufacturing technology. We had already seen UPS make an investment here in town in Fast Radius, a Chicago additive company like that. And so, you know, as supply chain people, that's what we start looking at to see, you know, that shift of starting to make that endless supply chain and, you know, products as they come. We were joking earlier that Amazon's probably just going to start making products themselves and just sending them using after buying up a company of their own right. But those are, we were just curious as if you had seen that and if those were some of the other technologies out there that that you're looking at as far as growth.
Yeah.
Well, yes. I think it's the transportation management systems. It's the electronic data coming out of the carriers and the warehouses. That's critical. It's the AI that was mentioned by Michael, one of the sessions today, in helping those platforms to do repetitive tasks at a larger scale. So those are the types of things, along with blockchain and all the different things that are the buzzwords that are out there now.
Yeah.
So you're seeing a lot of activity in the TMS space, the ELD space, AI, and blockchain. Those are four that kind of stand out in your mind?
That's correct. And I think another, the opportunity is in this quick pay and the management of the funds being run through the platform and making money off that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, and do you see blockchain having a role in that at all, but just with the, you know, the electronic payments and...
I think so. I think probably I'll dumb it down a little bit on the payments. Most of the ultimate care, somebody has to take that pair of red shoes to our house.
Yeah.
And that there's a huge infrastructure out there in that. What's important is how they get paid and how they finance their businesses. And there's huge opportunity to move away from the factoring space.
Oh, I agree with that.
Into a more quick pay. And I feel like blockchain will be part of that.
I think so,
as
too.
As far as is tracking that all the way down to the ultimate carrier.
Yeah.
And we were also talking earlier today, speaking of blockchain, Steve Banker had written an article back in August about the, I may get this wrong, but the IBM Brain Trust, which is a group of 12 of your major retailers, Walmart and some of the others of similar size, pulling together for a massive aligned integrated blockchain project, really focused on the food supply chain. And we all know what's going on there with our salads and lettuce and everything else, right? You know, I think making blockchain, first off, I don't think you can have a supply chain conversation without mentioning blockchain. I think it's federal regulation at this point. But how can we make blockchain more practical and more, got to demystify it, you know, because it's not just for the large companies, right? It's everyone, every company of any size can take advantage of that technology, right, Rob?
Well, that's right. And I think your point brought up about food and our lettuce. The Food Modernization Act was passed a couple of years ago by the federal government, and that's requiring tracking from origin to your table of any kind of food. And that's including the temperature. And a lot of in the refrigerated or temperature-sensitive space is monitoring this temperature through the supply chain. And using blockchain to help with that is going to be a huge advantage to meet these government requirements for safe food.
Yeah. Friend of the show, Bill Stankiewicz, down in Savannah area, has been really active in cold storage. And I think via the ports and via all the growing logistics infrastructure down in Savannah, cold storage has been one of the drivers there. So we'll see what happens in that space, but hey, I'm all for the safer the food, you know, with three kids and trying to eat healthier, hey, the better. So we'll see what happens. Michael, let's switch gears a little bit here. Enjoyed lunch with you last week. We talked about some of the good work you're doing from an advisory standpoint, a legal standpoint with manufacturers and transportation firms. What are some of the, I'm sure every day is different, but what are there some core threads, some common threads that, some key items that you see coming up regularly from a legal standpoint of how you're advising these industry firms?
I would say on a day-to-day basis, it's sort of blocking and tackling. It's de-risking your business through good processes. Things happen. You can't control everything, but having processes in place to be responsive and not let something get out of control is sort of a core theme. Now, that applies in a bunch of different areas.
Right.
So, you know, if you hire an employee who's going to work in your IT department and they're going to have access to data, you want to have an agreement in place with that employee that they recognize the proprietary nature of the data and that they won't use it inappropriately. If you have either homegrown technology software or you're customizing an existing product, you need your employees to sign an agreement that signs away or waives any ownership they may have in those improvements. If you were to analogize to a piece of real estate, when you go to sell your company, that buyer is going to want to make sure that you have good title to all of your assets, including that proprietary technology that makes you competitive. And those agreements are the manifestation that you own it. So a little misstep on the front end can cause a lot of
heartburn and big checks in the back. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So, and I know y'all do a lot of transaction work, right?
That's right.
In this space, and with the heightened activity, it seems. I mean, heck, we had organizational leaders just today that one in particular had acquired 8 companies since January 2016. You know, so wiring these organizations, I can't think, especially if you're moving that fast, you know, some of the things that you just aren't going to think about that your in-house teams are going to miss. Is that where, you know, where you're seeing a lot of the value that your team brings to the table?
Right. If somebody's thinking about selling their business, they need to run their business the best way they can today and not do what some of us might do with our homes, which is deferred maintenance. I'll deal with that later.
Right.
Because you don't have time. What happens in a transaction, Rob, you can speak to this expertly as well, which is when you go down the road to sell your business, it moves at both a lightning pace and a very slow pace. Buyers are very particular, and they want to see more and more data about your company and more diligence. And yet at the same time, you're going to be working on that transaction as the business owner or manager 24 hours a day. And so you need to have run your business well, and you need to have the information that is likely to be requested on hand and available to give.
And that's how you're going to maximize your offers and your leverage and all that good stuff, right?
Right.
Yep.
Right. It's very easy to say no if you're a buyer to a business. You find a problem. There's plenty of businesses for sale. You don't want to give a buyer a reason to say no.
Mm. Interesting. And Rob, just weigh in on that. What are some of the things you're seeing from things that can call deals to die quick? I mean, how can we prevent that?
Well, I'll go ahead and qualify. I'm a CPA, so this is coming from, you know where it's coming from. I think probably one of the biggest issues that companies, especially our clients, have is they do not have the proper administrative platform in place, which include supporting legal. And what most of these buyers, especially in the private equity, are financial guys. They're very detailed financial guys. And they want to understand the business. They want to make sure you get the widget from A to B and how you do it. But the financials and understanding trends and pricing and exposure are extremely critical. And if you're not able to provide that efficiently and correctly and explainable, your transaction is going to take a setback. Mm. And we go into so many companies, and in all respect to Joe or Susie, the bookkeeper, that have been there, because I'm either a salesperson or an operator that start a business. Those are the two types that usually start businesses. And the first thing they do is don't go out and hire a $75,000 to $150,000 financial person.
Right.
So we see a lot of challenges there. We try to help them get up to speed there, but it's very difficult if they hadn't done it back. One comment from Michael on the exposure. With the freight moving to 3PLs, brokers, and this digital freight network,
right.
The question of where the exposure, if there is an issue along the supply chain, is becoming more and more challenged. And the contracts and protecting yourself from a legal perspective, insurance perspective, are really critical, and something I think we're just on the forefront of.
Mm. You mean exposure within the improvement and upgrade of the technology? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
If there's an accident or damage, damage to the freight or an accident during the process, of where the exposure lies.
And where Convoy or, any of those guys.
Convoy, Uber Freight.
Gotcha.
Truck.
Yeah.
There's a number of them out there doing it.
Yeah.
And the question is where the exposure. And Michael obviously spends a lot of time understanding that in a contract, but that's a big issue out there.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It all starts with the contract. I mean, that's the first thing someone says. What does your contract say?
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Let's talk about the buy side a little bit. Is it, you know, we live in the Amazon era. We've already talked about data flying everywhere, technology flying everywhere. Is the sophistication levels of today's buyer that infinitely more advanced than what you've seen, say, even 5 or 10 years ago? Or is it about the same? Is everyone talking a language? What are you seeing, Rob?
They're a lot more educated as the transactions go. There's information about them. Their attorneys support them to help them better understand these companies and the risk and the challenges. I think what we're seeing now is just better understanding the cyclicality of the market and of the economy. And every deal we're working on now, we're providing bridges all the way back to the 08-09 of, you know, volume up, rates up, loads down, you know, all these different metrics to help them better understand how that will impact the transaction going forward.
Wow. Michael, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah. There's more data to look at, and so they look at more data. I'll give you an example of two things that you see now that you didn't see 10 years ago. The accounting industry now has a product that they sell. Whether the target company has audited financials or not, an accounting firm or a consulting firm will come in and do something called a quality of earnings report. And that's just a requirement. Deals don't happen without those. And those are, and you say, what does that mean? It really, the name sort of says it all. It's about the quality of the profits or the profitability of the company. So, is the information being recorded accurately? Is there some risk that you don't necessarily see just from an income statement and a balance sheet, such as customer concentration or credit issues with customers? And those reports then become the foundation from which a lot of other diligence arises. But if you talk to somebody 10 years ago, you wouldn't hear the word quality of earnings reports. And in fact, there's another product that the insurance industry has come out with that relates to mergers and acquisitions, which is what's called representation and warranty insurance. And that's a game changer as well. And let me tell you what that product is. When you sell a business, you're going to be expected to make certain representations and warranties about the business.
Like the sales pipeline?
Not so much. More, I would say more historical than predictive. Facts about the company. You've got all your licenses and permits. You're not in breach of any of your customer contracts. All of your employees have been paid according to law. You know, overtime has been paid and taxes have been withheld. That's a big part of what lawyers worry about. What is my client stating about its business? And in an acquisition agreement that might be 70 or 80 pages long, half of that agreement might be a variety of representations made by the seller to the buyer. And the impact is if after closing, a buyer finds out that one of those representations wasn't accurate, they're going to come back and ask for some money back from the sellers. So now with the
insurance... Never a good thing.
Never a good thing. And honestly, I haven't had a lot of situations in my experience where a buyer has come back and asked for it, but we worry about it.
Sure. Right.
There's now an insurance product where an insurance company, for a premium, just like when you buy insurance on your car or your house, for a premium, they will insure that risk up to a certain agreed-upon policy limit, okay? And that goes a long way to taking pressure off the buyer and the seller. It goes a long way to taking some pressure off the seller, but in order for that insurance company to be comfortable selling that policy, they put a lot of pressure on the buyer to make sure they've done adequate diligence so that there's unlikely going to be a payout under the policy. So it's changed the dynamic a lot.
Sounds like, and so new products are being rolled out, it sounds, with regularity to fill in some of the gaps that are coming about because of the environment, because of the level of activity, because of the new technologies, because buyers want to purchase these businesses free and clear, right?
Right.
As is, with the ability to sleep well at night, knowing that there's not going to be a $2 million judgment that they find out about 3 weeks in.
Right.
Yeah. Or even, for that matter, a $200,000 judgment. You don't want anything like that.
Right.
So, were you going to add something to that, Rob? I saw you about that.
I think it's so critical. Michael brought up some of the points. It's the term market. What's market? So when you're doing a transaction, the question will go around, what is market? And I encourage sellers to really think through their legal counsel and who they choose. We've had guys that, you know, hire attorneys to do divorces in the morning and then do a transaction right. in the afternoon. I'm sure they're great attorneys and great lawyers, but I encourage you to interview and ask what transactions they're done, because if you're going with private equity, you're going up against probably a New York, London, or LA firm, a big-time firm. And you want to make sure your attorney, whether it's in Atlanta or New York or wherever, has the experience to know when to push back on certain items and when to help you, advise you how to move forward on items. Mm. And the term market is a key point of your advisors to know when to push back and when not to.
Great point.
What the norm is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So going back, you know, so Will and I are both are big baseball fans. He's a St. Louis Cardinals fan. I'm a big Braves fan. And we were talking about some of the pending player salary issues, speaking of what's market.
Right.
And Will and I aren't exactly in lockstep in terms of it, and we won't dive into it now, but I think that applies to all things, right, including the world of baseball. What is true market? You know, is it what owners are willing to pay, or is it what the whole, you know, fans and what pulls people out or whatever it is? But it's interesting. That's great advice, just like we heard from so that's going to be Know Your Market. It's going to be one of the T-shirts we make. Rob, yeah. We made some things. Who said Know Your Freight?
Oh, well, gosh. That was
Don.
Yeah, Don.
Don Newell, who's going to be at Ignite. Don Newell. So what's your market? Know Your Freight.
Yeah.
We're going to come up with our top five lessons learned from Ignite.
That's good.
What, you know, given these some of the perspective around the transactions and whatnot that you've been sharing thus far, and looking at what I think a lot of folks are saying, there's a slowdown coming. It's just a matter of time when, right? What are your projections if you were to break out your crystal ball for 2019 in terms of M&A activity, specifically in the end-to-end supply chain space? Do you think it's going to continue to increase, stay about the same, or drop off, or does it depend on when the bubble shrinks or pops, or what?
I think what we'll see is I think you'll still see a healthy activity. I think what from the private equity, the family office, which is similar to a private equity, in the strategics, the global trends, the guys like that, I think they're going to continue to buy. I think they're going to do what they call tuck-ins, which are opportunities to fold an area that they are weak or don't have the capability into their platform. Also, I think it'll take longer. I think they'll do much more and much more careful and diligence on these transactions. So I think you'll see the same activity, the same interest, but I think you'll see a little bit smaller tuck-in deals and much more careful, slower deals.
Yeah, so, Rob, it's interesting you shared that, because that's exactly what we heard this morning with a couple of folks that are acquiring companies left and right, how they could strategically improve their portfolio with some of these tuck-in deals. So you're illustrating your expertise as we sit and talk here, so thanks for that. What about you, Michael? What are you thinking from a level of activity standpoint in 2019? What are you seeing?
Well, 2018 and 2019, I mean, people ask me, how is your 2018? It really hasn't changed. I mean, it's things that started in the last quarter just blazing along.
Right.
We're really busy now. I don't know when the music stops, but I've been doing this for 27 years. And my observation is good companies get sold in good and bad markets. You know, people overpay in a good market, and they try to find a workaround to get the target company because it's more hotly pursued. But even in a down market, good companies get sold, maybe not for the same valuation. That's a function of interest rates largely. And look, our client base is in the, you know, companies that are in the $10 to $150 million space. Those are the tuck-in deals. So people are buying those opportunistically all the time.
And going back to something you said earlier, the de-risking approach, that's a trend that you will see continue to increase, you believe, and especially a methodical approach to de-risking the business sounds like something we're seeing more of.
I'd like to see more of it. Let me tell you a trend I've seen in the last, Rob, jump in here and tell me if you agree with this. A trend that I've seen in the last 18 months that I have not seen before is that buyers are going directly to sellers. They're trying to bypass intermediaries, folks like Rob. And honestly, when we've had clients, and we've had this happen plenty of times in the last 18 months, you get a call from a client, I never thought my business was saleable. I just got this great offer I want to sell. And the first thing I do is say, hold on. No one makes their best offer right off the bat. And no one makes their best offer if they don't think they're competing to get your company. And to me, the most important thing you can have next to a good lawyer and a good accountant is a good investment banker who can help manage that process. I've worked on plenty of deals in the last 18 months without an investment banker. And sure, maybe they saved a fee, but I don't know what they gave up in terms of value by not creating that sense of scarcity amongst the buying community that they knew they were competing.
You get what you pay for and you get what you don't pay for.
That's right? Exactly right.
Well said. But what's market is really an important phrase, the de-risking, I think, and kind of putting that perspective on. But, you know, for those of us that don't think about some of the things you've shared throughout the conversation, Michael, we need experts that can look for those gaps, right, and protect the deals and protect the buyers or the sellers for that matter. Now, do y'all, Rob and Michael, do y'all ever work together on any of the business deals that transactions or you name it?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough. Our firm was fortunate enough just to close a deal with Michael's firm. He actually was the person that referred it to us, and we worked on together for that deal for the last 2 years.
Wow,
and
right.
We closed it last week.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. It was a great deal for the management team and for the investors, and hopefully they think the attorneys and the investment bankers were somewhat helpful in the case.
First of many to come.
No, it's just
adding on to
adding
high
in,
fives. Okay.
High fives.
Well, let's kind of shift gears as we look to start wrapping up the conversation here today. We know that y'all stay busy on the industry event circuit between your speaking engagements and supporting the events, whether they're here in the Atlanta area or in Georgia or abroad. What's on the, and Rob, let's start with you. What's on your radar upcoming events or speaking engagements?
The next one that I'm going to be part of is the TMA, Turnaround Management Association Distressed Investor Conference. Sounds awful, but it's just a great event out in Las Vegas, which makes it even better. It's a national event that brings consultants and capital and attorneys in the bankruptcy and distress space together. I'm fortunate enough to sit on a panel, and we'll be discussing disruptive technologies in the logistics space. And that's going to be really interesting. I think we have food and healthcare, maybe the other two.
Okay.
So we're going to be talking about that, which, you know, comes down to the RPA, repetitive process automation, which we're talking about AI, which is a big part of it. Mm. We're talking about the payment process, the quick pay and those things. I think the whole web marketing and being able to digitize and use the web to gain your customers are going to be a big part of it. And then, of course, the blockchain and all the buzzwords that are out there. So I'm looking forward to that.
So, and that's next week, right?
That'll be the Thursday and Friday of next week, 6th and 7th of February.
So I'd love to connect you. Our good friend Tony Shiroda with the Reverse Logistics Association was here today, and he was supposed to be on a podcast with us tomorrow, but weather is going to be intervening, unfortunately. We'll have him back again.
Great. We've already closed school, by the way.
But anyway, great friend of the show there. The RLA, his association, is an association on the move. Their national conference is next week in Vegas. Lots of logistics players, supply chain folks, manufacturers. I'd love to make a connection since you're going to be out there already. I'm a big fan of Tony and the Reverse Logistics Association, and I hate that I couldn't make it. But if I can't, I'd love to have a good friend make that connection too.
That would be great. Really appreciate that.
Terrific. And we will look for the wrap up on the Distressed Investor, the TMA Distressed Investor Conference, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Distressed Investor. Yes.
Terrific. I'm sure they'll benefit from your expertise. So switching gears, Michael, this could be a 3-hour answer when I ask you what's on your calendar, but what's on your radar? What's bubbling up to the top?
Excuse me. Couple things in the next month. One is the first annual Supply Chain Leadership Awards, sponsored or co-sponsored by Apex and the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And then on March 30th, the Gwinnett Chamber has its Movers and Makers Award Breakfast.
That is a fantastic. The Gwinnett Chamber does a fantastic job with that movers and makers. In fact, the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards were benchmarked a lot of what we did with what they've been doing at Gwinnett for going back probably 10 or 15 years, I imagine. And you know, appreciate your support with the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards. We hope to see you there. I was going to mention one other. The Georgia Logistics Summit also. So the Supply Chain Awards, March 12th, which we nominations and sponsorships are still open. And Apex Atlanta and the Metro Chamber is pleased to put that on along with CSCMP Atlanta Roundtable, right? Fantastic supply chain organization here in town. And we should say we got to start giving UPS some love.
Oh, yeah.
UPS came on as a host sponsor for this first year event last week. We just finalized that deal. So that we've been working on that, maybe not for 2 years, but for quite some time. But, you know, UPS is such a we all know the important cog that they are in the supply chain city's economy and local industry. So it's great to have them be a part.
It's all the love we've given them on this show, I think, is what's done it.
Well,
we talk about them almost every week in some capacity.
True.
Because it's the supply chain city and they're here.
That's right. Tendre Bellamy, VP over at UPS, is part of our Apex Atlanta Executive Advisory Board. And we owe her a hug and a high five when we see her next, because she's a big supporter of the awards and helped make that happen. All right, so one of the easiest questions maybe to finish the interview on with Rob and with Michael. So first off, Rob, how do folks learn more about Arnall, Golden, and Gregory?
You
What's the best
Rob.
Way?
You said Rob, you mean
oh,
Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry, Michael.
I can tell how great they are.
Where do they go to find out more information? I know your website is agg.com, but where else would they go?
I'm on LinkedIn. You can look me up on LinkedIn or really, the website's the best place.
Okay. And switching gears to Rob, JGS Resources, how can they find you in case they want to bring you in on one of their next biggest deals?
Same thing, website or LinkedIn. But, you know, if anybody's interested in just learning more about how to position their company or what's going on in the industry, love to do a call or visit if I'm in town and help them make the best decision whether they use our firm or not.
And we can get you connected if you want to reach out to the show, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at Supply Chain Now Radio. We'll make sure to get you, I'm sorry, Scott at SupplyChainNowRadio.com. We'll make sure to get you connected to Rob Adams or Michael Golden, where you're going to find some great expertise and wisdom as you look to make a deal or do business or you name it. Great advisory services here. So great to have you back, both of y'all on the show today. Will, before we kind of wrap up the conversation today, what do we miss? What did you enjoy most about Jumpstart 19 here today?
Oh, I think, again, just I've been focused. I'm very interested in your topic that you're doing next week. I mean, I know that I've personally been focused on what disruptive technologies are going to do in specific in supply chain and specific in logistics. And we've seen what it's done in the freight markets, and we've seen what it's done in trucking. And it was just interesting to hear what it's happening in LTL as well. I mean, especially with the way that everybody, I mean, the last mile and LTL becoming so much more important over the last few years, to hear the level of innovation with a lot of those technologies. It's not that I didn't expect it, but I mean, it was almost in every session that we heard. So that was impressive today.
Every session. And we're going to have our work cut out for us as we go back and compile all the content today and start to kind of pull out the 3,000 nuggets, right?
And how many episodes did we do? This is number seven.
Are you testing me?
So that, no. I wanted you to know that this is the Jeff Blauser edition.
Yeah, Jeff Blauser.
Yeah.
Jeff Blauser, remember the time he hit 3 home runs against the Cubs up at Wrigley? And
well, I always support that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Cardinals fan.
Big thanks to Michael Golden with AGG and Rob Adams with JGS Resources for joining us here today on Supply Chain Now Radio. Michael, I want to thank you again. Not to thank you, Rob, but Michael, appreciate over the last few years that we've been connected, all of your support and leadership within the end-to-end supply chain space. It's making a big impact, and glad to reconnect with you on the show here today.
Thank you.
And the Atlanta business community as a whole, you guys have always been great with all the things that the Chronicle do and all those great events. So
that's right.
We
70
all
years.
Appreciate that.
70 years. Yeah. Wow. Well, that wraps up our final segment of the day here at Jumpstart 19. We got to talk about thanks. We got to say a big thanks to Tom Swenson, with the SMC3 team, who hosted an incredible show here today. My first Jumpstart, which I'm ashamed to say, but we had a it was the snippets we heard from the presentations and certainly the conversations we had back here and their sheer graciousness.
And we only got shushed one time. I'm shocked. I'm really shocked.
We talked kind of loud. But to our audience, really appreciate you tuning in. Stay tuned as we've got upcoming podcasts from Supply Chain City, from Tech Connect, from the Transportation Talk, Leadership Matters, a variety of different series. Be sure to check out our upcoming events, replays of our interviews, such as a great one here today with Michael and Rob. Other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Will?
Subscribers. Hey, subscribers. You knew where we were going. We're at 3.5. We have got to get to 4 million.
That's right.
We've got to do it.
But you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud. Join us. Subscribe. We'd love our subscribers. On behalf of Will Haraway, Malcolm, the research team at Supply Chain Now Radio,
Thank you, Malcolm.
Is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful week, and we hope to see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio. Thank you.
It was fun.